Reggie's out today. I'm Luke Morrow sitting in for him alongside John Lopez and Figgy Fig on the steel wheels. And it is time to go around the NFL here on In the Loop. You can always text the show 713-572-4610 or get to us in the YouTube and Twitch chats as well. But let's go around the NFL. I saw controversy, some talk about Patrick Mahomes and his body shape. This is a conversation piece every offseason, it seems. But Mahomes, it's always funny when you see some of these great athletes and you see them shirtless and it's like, oh my gosh, like that, he's this great athlete. That's what the body looks like.
Yeah.
And that's the case for Mahomes where, you know, he's got what they call kind of that dad bod these days. And I guess, who was it, Kevin?
It was Kevin Kitzman.
Kevin Kitzman created a bit of a stir talking about Mahomes being overweight. Is this a topic? Is this really a concern or an issue?
Well, the reason it was interesting to me, and look, greatest quarterback perhaps ever, certainly greatest quarterback in recent years. How many times has he, we all know his track record. And he has that little bit of a dad bod that has never really hindered him. Excuse me. But I will say this. So Kevin Kitzman, first of all, let's backtrack. Longtime radio host in Kansas City, very well known, now podcasting, and basically said that he's fat and he needs to stop eating Taco Bell. and I think he said something about McDonald's, whatever it was, and get in shape. And it's asinine and it's ridiculous when you look at what Patrick Mahomes is doing. It's ridiculous. I mean, we can all agree on that. This is how it works for Patrick Mahomes. Now, Mahomes' personal trainer, Bobby Stroop, fired back at him and said, you obviously need attention. If you want to see what in shape is, go make it through a practice at St. Joe or run hurry up offense, scrambling back-to-back plays. You don't have a clue what it takes. It's not a look, it's performance. He went on to say, research QBs and pitchers in the Hall of Fame with six packs. Tell me what percentage of them played well that way. I have questions. When has Patrick appeared to be tired in a game? When did he not have the physical ability to play? When have you seen us train? When have you seen him eat? So he was very upset that Kitzman even brought this up.
Uh-huh.
This is the only thing that I want to bring up. You can't argue the success. You can't argue what he's done. But let's keep in mind, once you get past 30, 31, 32, Tom Brady got in better shape than he ever was in his life. He did, you know, the TB12 mm-hmm. and all that stuff. All I'm saying is, while this is ridiculous to say now, I don't think it's a ridiculous premise. And by the way, Chiefs fans were criticizing Mahomes as well, up and down. Yeah. I don't think it's a ridiculous premise to say, we've all been there. You got to kind of change the way you eat and work out. I think maybe that's what Kitzman was getting at.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. Right. It's hard to criticize now because it's worked. But what about at a certain point, like, will it continue to work for the entirety of his career?
Yeah.
Brady's big thing was the whole, like, pliability and all that sort of stuff. And maybe that's what allowed him, at least in part, to extend his career as long as he did. I know you look at these quarterbacks, like the ones that played a long time. Rodgers is playing into his 40s, and he's in good shape as well. I mean, not necessarily ripped, but doesn't have a dad bod by any means. And then you look at some of the maybe bigger quarterbacks, like Ben Roethlisberger broke down later in his career. I don't know if these are fair comparisons to draw, but I think it's certainly something to wonder about. Like, will this eventually catch up to Mahomes if you're trying to play until you're 40, like a lot of quarterbacks these days? So I do think it's a fair concern
if he'd have just approached it differently.
Yeah.
Is Mahomes out there eating Taco Bell and just not really caring about?
I mean, what I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's very understandable to be concerned about that part of it. But even with Tom Brady, we always talk about his body and all that stuff, but he had a very strict diet, man. He wasn't eating all that junk food and stuff like that. I don't know what Patrick Mahomes is. Maybe he's on that type of diet too. I don't know. But if he's just out here not caring, just living like a teenager, just eating all type of junk,
I think his
that stuff will catch up to
you. That's my point. I think the message I get, it was just delivered awkwardly. Like, it was delivered as a criticism, like he's some fat slob out there.
Yeah. You know?
But I think, like, figure, what are you, like 37?
Yeah, I'm 36.
Yeah, you're 36. I mean, you get to that age, and he's 29, 30, going to be 30 when the season starts. Once you get to that age, you do have to change the way you're, I mean, we all have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
For me, it was once I turned 30. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, ooh, I put on the most weight I ever have. I'm like, I can't eat the same way I always did. It never used to catch up to me. Now it's catching up to me.
When I was in my 20s, I could lose 6 to 8 pounds in a week.
Yeah.
You know, just cut back and run a little more or whatever. That doesn't happen.
Yeah. Man, that stuff hard. You can eat a bag of chips and be bloop.
For sure.
Like, so I think that's what he's saying. But it is ridiculous to say he needs to do this because he's fat. No, he's winning. But I think he might need to change.
It seemed like he kind of came across like he was talking about an offensive lineman that just came to camp out of shape and not really doing his job and all that stuff. Patrick Mahomes still doing his job. Don't get it wrong. But you wonder, could he play up into his late 30s like Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady? And you can't do it if you just eating whatever, man.
Yeah. In the long term, you got to take care of that body. I do think it's interesting. I don't think this applies to quarterbacks, but I do think it's interesting that we see guys that do lose weight and then they're not the same athlete afterwards. Mm-hmm. Like CC Sabathia got skinny towards the end of his career and had like a bad year, and then he put the weight back on. And he's like, I just couldn't pitch like that.
Yeah.
I know Seth has been talking a lot about Dameon Pierce, like losing weight. That hasn't worked for him. You got to actually bulk up. So
there
is Kevin Love. Kevin Love, fat Kevin Love was cold, man.
Right. There is something to that of like being comfortable at that playing weight. But yeah, for Mahomes, long term, you would imagine he'd have to make sure he's taking care of himself.
Yeah.
Warren Sharp of Sharp Analytics ranked the Texans as having the 17th best running back room, just ahead of the Vikings and the Cardinals. I also know ESPN ranked individual running backs, and I believe Mixon was not in the top 10, if I remember correctly. I was looking at it this morning. They had him, I think, in the early teens. Does that seem fair, kind of back of the envelope, just looking at these teams or thinking about the Texans? Warren Sharp has them 17th. What are your thoughts on that ranking?
Well, it does seem fair right now, but I think what it's also saying is if you get the right Nick Chubb, and last time you and I chatted, I know you've got some skepticism about Nick Chubb.
Yeah, a little bit.
But if you do get the good Nick Chubb, I think this running back room probably has the best opportunity to be a surprise on this squad. You know, just because of Chubb alone on that. But just to go through the list, the top three you can kind of figure, you know, Lions, Eagles, Falcons. Those are good running back rooms. Then they have teams like I said, you know, just ahead of the Texans is the Cardinals. Okay. Like Jets are ahead of them. Rams.
Do you feel like this had anything to do with the O-line as well?
It might.
Like, as far as these gradings?
It might.
Well, he said best running back rooms, though. So
okay.
For this ranking, he shouldn't consider offensive lines, but maybe he did.
Mm-hmm.
They're, as you said, Texans, Cardinals, Chargers, Jets, Rams are the teams ahead of them. My concern is, It would be one of the best running back rooms if it was like 3 years ago. Yeah. But you have two running backs who are 29, and we know that once you get to like that 28, 29-year-old range, that's where you start to worry about some of these running backs. So, but I do agree with your point that it has the potential.
Mm-hmm.
If things work out with those two running backs, as they're both very talented, even you throw in Woody Marks, maybe you get something out of Dameon Pierce, it has the potential to, be like maybe the most surprising or, for lack of a better term, overachieving position group on the roster.
But I saw 17 and I went, dang, that's just below the midway point of the of the entire league. But that, to me, that raises a lot of opportunity for them to be a surprise, as I mentioned. But I do think even though he's doing the rooms by himself, also depends on the line. You know, it also depends on the offensive line, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit as well.
Yeah, that's the big part of it too.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, speaking of the Texans, Deshaun Watson, former Texan, got his ring. So he spent, I was not familiar with this story. He spent over $1 million on his wedding ring and then almost $3 million on his, fiance or wife's wedding
gracious,
ring.
Man.
Yeah.
So he dropped, what's that math? About $4 million on the two rings.
$4 million. Now his was $1.3 million just for the wedding band. Apparently it's like whatever clarity, diamond, you know, blah, blah, blah. The highest of the high, the best of the best. And then a little over $2.5 million on Jilly's wedding band and engagement ring. $4 million on the wedding rings. We don't know what his investments are and how much money, you know, he's making, you know, even just off the field and investments and all that stuff. But out of $230 million contract, he dropped $4 million on the rings.
I mean, if you had all that money, would you pay that much for some rings? I don't think I would, man.
I don't think so.
Certainly not for my own. Like, if my wife wanted a $2 million ring and I had the money, like, all right, I guess, happy wife, happy life. But no, I'm not buying myself a $1.5 million ring.
Yeah, just give me a silver band.
Yeah.
And that's on
maybe
top.
Maybe engrave something in it.
And that's on top of, like, everything else we've seen from them. You know, like, you know, just
the wedding. The wedding had to be a lot because it looked like it was a destination wedding. Was it a destination wedding?
I think so.
Yeah, it looked like they was outside the country somewhere.
And then all the shop. I mean, I get it. Look, hey, it's your money. But, man, $4 million?
Not my money.
It's not my money, but $4 million? That seemed like a lot.
I just Googled this. This is from Sports Illustrated. The wedding was $230 million? Is that true?
That can't be true.
That can't be true, right? Be true.
That's his whole check,
right? Yeah, I guess they're just referencing. I guess they're just referencing the money that he's because they said he's blowing $230 million on the wedding. I think they're just referencing that he's blowing part of
contract.
It. Yeah, he's blowing a big portion of the money he's made on the wedding. I'm curious how much the wedding costs. It's got to be a lot. Mm-hmm. If Travis Hunter was $500,000 for his wedding, I'm sure Deshaun Watson was even more.
Well, they got married on a yacht, according to the New York Post. So that ain't cheap.
No, it ain't cheap, man.
Hey, you know what? It truly is your money, your life. It just seems like his life of excess is going to catch up at some point.
And my thing is, this marriage better last. I spent all this money for it not to last.
Yeah.
Nah, this gotta last right here.
And there's
also
something about it of just kind of like flaunting in everyone's face because we know what happened or maybe didn't have whatever. But then he gets that huge contract from the Browns, and that's a whole other conversation. Shouldn't have gotten that. And then they manipulated the contract, so when he did get punished by the NFL, it didn't cost him very much of that money. And then I don't know, just to throw around that money, like you'd like to see. Maybe it's just me, like a little more. For a guy that made some of those mistakes, just not be so...
Be a little more low-key.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And he's the last thing they are is low-key.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, they put it in the face every time. But the other part of it is, like, I that's another world from where we live. We don't know. Maybe $4 million, you know, he can make in a day with some of his investment. I don't know. I don't know. But it just seems the excess and the putting it in your face, like you said, is a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Last thing as we go around the NFL, speaking of rings, the Eagles Super Bowl rings were delayed. Now, it might not sound like a big deal because the season doesn't start till September, but they had planned their ring ceremony for, I think it was like last week, because guys haven't had to go to training camp yet. It was like the last chance to get that roster together because some players are not on the roster anymore, like one guy who's now here in Houston. But there was a delay in actually like creating the rings. In manufacturing them, the company had a delay in producing these rings. And so now the Eagles, they planned it for later this month and hoping guys can come, but training camps will have started. My whole thing with this, though, is like you won in February. It's been 5 months. The rings were delayed. Maybe I'm completely naive or ignorant about this. How long does it take to produce these rings that you still couldn't have them ready 5 months later?
Well, I don't know. I'm sure it takes some time. My takeaway was on this is how bad does it look for the people who made these rings? I mean, they had the event planned. Everybody was going to be in town, and they're like, we're going to be a little longer on this. It's just a bad look and a bad thing for like you said, C.J. Gardner-Johnson and others.
Yeah, they're going to have to try to find a time that works for most people, but training camp starts 2 weeks from today for the Texans, so guys are going to be busy. Can't all get together to get those rings. That's around the NFL here on In the Loop. Speaking of the NFL, did the Chiefs just lay out a template for the Texans' potential new stadium? We'll talk about that when we come back. It's In the Loop. Did the Kansas City Chiefs just lay out a template for the Texans' potential future plans when it comes to a new stadium? We'll get to that here on In the Loop. I'm Luke Morrow in for Reggie this week and sitting in alongside the regular fellas, John Lopez and Figgy Fig on the other side of the glass. You can always join the conversation, 713-572-4610 on the text line. So the Chiefs got an extension to decide on how they would like to proceed with their stadium situation, whether that's a renovation or potentially a new stadium. Do you think this has As I said in the tease, provided some sort of template here for what the Texans may do with their situation.
Yeah, I don't think I don't see any way that it doesn't. And, you know, the Chiefs, clearly what an amazing stadium it is. If you've never been, it is truly one of the best in the NFL. But rough around the edges, you know, nowadays. Now, I believe they had a renovation 2010-ish, maybe somewhere in there, that kind of fixed some things up. But this is where it kind of made me think about the Texans. So they got an extension yesterday afternoon, I believe, on two options for proceeding with the new stadium, with a new stadium in Kansas or a renovated Arrowhead. So the renovation, the option that they have for the renovation is $1.15 billion. That's just to renovate Arrowhead. And that includes bonds that, you know, obviously the public is going to pay up to 50% of the costs. And $50 million in tax credits. So that's if they stay there. $1.15 billion, 50% bonds, $50 million in tax credits. How can the Texans not be starting there for a renovation? Like, that's the baseline, right? And this is not to pass judgment. I would do the same damn thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it works, you know, when you're renovating a stadium. But here's where it gets interesting, to me anyway. So I don't think the Chiefs are ever going to move from Arrowhead, but a lot of things that I didn't think happen in when it comes to stadiums and paying for them have happened. So I don't think so, but we'll see. Now, here's the other thing. Kansas countered that offer for the renovation because they want the stadium in Kansas,
mm-hmm.
you know, right over the border with what they call star bonds covering up to 70% of the new stadium's cost.
Goodness gracious.
70% of the cost Kansas is going to foot. Again, their taxes, their bonds, et cetera. That, get ready, get, buckle up. I mean, buckle up, because we've already said, you know, they're fast-tracking this whole new event center or whatever you want to call it that the Texans, we know that, the entertainment facility, the new training facility, their offices, they've already kind of fast-tracked that. And they mentioned, I guess, was it Sugar Land and Pearland and Katy?
Yeah, I heard Katy, Pearland, the Woodlands.
Maybe it was the Woodlands. Yeah, it was Sugar Land. It was the Woodlands, Katy, and Pearland. Like, they're going to have to offer at least 70% like the Chiefs did, you know, like Kansas did for the Chiefs in order to bring that stuff up there.
When if Lay Charles decided to jump in here? Like, we offer 80%, 90%.
Yeah.
So that's the baseline. And so what I'm getting at is, let's not be too surprised if that 70% gets really attractive to the Texans and they move the whole damn thing out there. You know, the stadium, everything. Are we ready to have a suburban stadium?
I wouldn't prefer it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it might happen, especially if it's the right deal. And that's how this, you know, that's how usually this stuff works. Obviously, I know this the stadium talk might bring up some old wounds from 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember, like, I grew up in Connecticut, and when the Patriots built their stadium now, Connecticut offered to pay 100% of the stadium if you move to Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Kraft supposedly, you know, they were going to do the deal. We were on the waiting list for season tickets. And then, you know, Massachusetts swooped in and said, no, we'll pony up the money. You stay here. And they got the new stadium. So anyways, yeah, I mean, it's that hardball approach. And I wouldn't be surprised if with the Chiefs, too, with that, use that negotiation as you laid out, like, hey, Kansas is offering 70%. You better up it, or we're going to move. And even if you're not going to move, like, Robert Kraft was never going to leave, but you get the deal. Yeah, it becomes that whole negotiation. And for the Texans, certainly, like you said, I mean, this is the baseline. The Chiefs are doing this. Why can't we get a similar deal?
Yeah, and then here's the other part that I think really makes it more attractive for the Texans. And again, just to emphasize, I would much rather the stadium be here.
Yeah, me too.
I would much
rather. In the
city? Yeah, somewhere in the city, yeah. I would much rather, you know, they not move, but I get it, they are. But what makes it more attractive for the Texans is they would have control. Right now, they can't even get the plumbing worked on without going through the county. And so they would have more control. So if, let's say, just as an example, Katy. Sorry, Katy, people. I know traffic's a mess out there. But let's say Katy says, you see what they're doing over in Kansas City, in Kansas? We'll give you 70% for the whole shebang. We'll give you 70% for the entertainment, the training, and the new stadium. Howard, and control. You know, the Texans actually have a say in everything, you know, involved with the stadium. How would you – I wouldn't say no. I mean,
I'll definitely be listening.
Yeah, I want the stadium here, but I wouldn't say no.
No.
You know?
Yeah, so if they keep it here, will the city still have control of it?
The county,
will they still have control of it?
Maybe that's negotiable. You know, maybe they can say, hey, we want to, you know, we'll stay here.
We'll stay here, but we need control of it.
But keep in mind, that lease goes through, what, 2030 something?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I think it's 2032, if I'm remembering that right. But they could rip that up, you know, and maybe have more control here. But they're still already planning on their facilities and everything, the entertainment district and all that. And I've said this before. If you're going to have this massive entertainment district that you have control of, that you have your, you know, restaurants and event centers and concert venues and, you know, game day stuff, why would you not want a stadium there for 17 more dates, or not 17, let's say 10, 11 more dates, you know, to have 80,000 people out there?
Yeah, for sure.
Why would you not?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's becoming the big thing with all these stadiums. I mean, that's what all these teams are after. And you were right, by the way, it expires in 2032.
Yeah, I thought that was
the lease. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hypothetically speaking, say the Chiefs do build a new stadium and they don't just renovate and forget like the deal they get with the money and all mm-hmm. that sort of stuff. Just simply new stadium, whatever the finances are, they build a new stadium. Do you think that would have any impact on kind of like a keeping up with the Joneses, where we always see in the NFL whenever mm-hmm. one team builds a new stadium, you know, the Vikings had the great new stadium, mm-hmm. or I guess the Cowboys were first, then the Vikings, you know, and then the Falcons.
Yeah.
Do you think that, say the Chiefs, if they were to build a new stadium, would that drive the Texans to then want a new stadium themselves as opposed to just renovating?
I personally, and I don't know this from any sourcing or anything, it's just my gut feeling, I think they already want a new stadium.
Mm.
I think everything you've just laid out, whether it's, you know, Dallas or whatever they call it, Frisco and all that stuff, Arlington or Atlanta or Denver. Didn't Denver build a bunch of stuff out there around their facility?
Cleveland.
I think they already want a new stadium, just me personally. So if they can come in, again, just using KD as an example, hey, we'll match what they're doing. We'll do 70%. That's millions, if not billions, of dollars they can save.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the new stadium is going to be, what, $6 billion?
Yeah,
something like
and
that.
They brought that new president in. They ain't bring him in just to renovate.
No, they brought him in for this.
Yeah.
They brought him in specifically for this.
Yeah, and I think regardless of what we want or what we think is best, a lot of times with these things, it just comes down to the best deal. So as mm-hmm. you said, right, if that's Katie or somewhere else, whatever comes in with that best offer, it's hard to turn that down. It's hard to say no, even if you have to move outside of the city a little bit or actually change locations instead of staying where you currently are, renovating or finding somewhere downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So it usually just comes down to that.
Buckle up.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I think this is going to get very, very interesting very, very quickly. I think, you know, they are fast tracking the new entertainment facility and training facility. We might hear about something on those lines before training camp is over. You know, I think it's that fast. And if that happens, I don't think the stadium is very far behind because they're going to put the screws to the county here.
Yeah, and plus you see other teams moving forward.
Yeah.
So that ain't making it any better for the county or mm-hmm. the city or whatever. So they looking at these other teams. And, yeah, I think it's going to move quicker than we think.
I do, too.
Just out of curiosity, I'm putting you on the spot here. Did you know how long the extension is for Kansas City? You might have referenced it earlier.
I do not know the exact. You're talking about if they stay in Arrowhead.
Yeah, like that. The extension they got yesterday for. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, like when this might all come to a head here.
I do have it here somewhere, but I didn't write it down exactly how long. But they did get an extension.
Yeah,
to make that decision.
Because I'm curious if that mm-hmm. then speeds it. You know, if that process is sped up, then it'll speed things up. I'm just curious their mm-hmm. timeline
mm-hmm.
in Kansas City, but it's interesting. 8-3-2, so they should move the stadium to the west part of Katy.
Mm-hmm.
832 says bring it to Bridgeland, Texas.
Bridgeland. Let's go. Now that's a hike. That would be a hike for me personally.
Move it out there to Beaumont. they paid like 100%.
What is pretty cool is, you know, people in Katy are like, yeah, I'd go to a lot more games if it's out here.
You also got some people in Katy like, no.
No way.
It is crowded already.
No way.
Yeah, as 832, another 832 said, buckle up, Buttercup. Yeah, this could get really interesting. Mm-hmm. By the way, I do like, just off topic, this 281 saying, question of the day, what would you spend $4.3 million on, going back to the Deshaun Watson wedding rings?
If I had $230 million like him,
yeah,
well, that'd be at least a baseline for a house, not a ring.
No, not a ring.
No, it's 100% a house.
Yeah, not a ring. That's a gangster.
And that's a lot of money for a house to be. I guess it depends where you at.
Yeah.
Like if you in over here in West University, then you'll go past a little $4.3 million house, man. Yeah. Getting ripped off.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if I had that money, I'm that type of person. It would be hard for me to like sign over a check for $4.3 million, even if I could spend it. Like, yeah, that's a lot.
I would have to have a big ass ranch, a couple acres of land, or something like that.
Absolutely. Well, keep an eye on whatever happens there with the Chiefs and how that might influence or impact whatever might happen here with the Texans and their stadium situation. When we come back, time for What's Poppin', including the NBA teams here in the state of Texas stepping up and doing something really cool. We'll get to that next. It's In the Loop. What is poppin'? We'll let you know here on In the Loop. I'm Luke Morrow in for Reggie, alongside John Lopez and Figgy Fig on the ones and twos. You as well, 713-572-4610 to get in touch with the show on the text line. Let's go through some things here, including, sadly, you know, that there's... Well, you were just on vacation in the Hill Country, but not quite where the disaster occurred, fortunately, for you and your family. But what a terrible thing that obviously occurred over the weekend. Our thoughts and prayers continue to go out to all those that were impacted and affected. A lot of Houston connections as well. You might even know someone or family members that were impacted. Just a terrible story. And of course, we're thinking of everyone that has had to deal with this. With that said, bit of a cool story to come out of the tragedy in the sense that the Mavs, Spurs, and Rockets, the NBA teams, they're donating $2 million to relief efforts in Texas Hill Country. And then you have the Texans and the Cowboys. They're donating $1.5 million. And the Astros are donating $1 million as well. So, terrible situation, but it's nice that the sports teams are trying to step up and do what they can to help out in this tragedy.
Of course, and you know, speaking to the Chiefs, did you see... I guess it was Lamar Hunt's great-granddaughter.
Oh, yeah.
Passed. She was at the camp, I think the Mystic Camp.
Oh, yeah. Man, I
yeah.
didn't know that.
Yeah, his great-dad, like 9, 10 years old.
Oh, so I'm
like,
man.
That's the thing that just got terrible. Me, man. I was just,
yeah, the
was,
kids.
It was ridiculous. But yes, I mean, obviously you can't put a price on these things, and everybody wishes you didn't have to donate this money in the first place. One thing, though, that as we were, you know, picking up on this story, now we got some rain. We were 60 miles away, which... Isn't that wild? Like just 60 miles away and nothing.
Yeah.
Like we were in the Hill Country. There were creeks and riverbeds and they were running more than usual, but not anything crazy. We're just 60 miles away from.
I had to check on you, man.
You did. I'm glad you did.
Yeah, because I seen it on the news, but it was one point they said Hill Country.
Yeah.
And I thought about, I'm like, oh, wait, Lope, I think he's in the Hill Country. So I'm like, let me Man,
it was wild that we were so close and nothing you know, remotely like that happened because of the Guadalupe and all that. But here's one thing I did think about as we were sort of, you know, obviously, you know, grieving and you know, worried for the families, et cetera, during our trip. We went down, like there was this little pavilion area, and then we went up in the hill to do a little hiking and stuff. We went in like maybe 20 feet from where we were getting a cell signal. And gone, like zero cell. Mm-hmm. Like, what is it? Would it say like S something?
Yeah,
or
SOS.
Yeah. And so I'm like, we're 20 feet in, not nearly as bad, and we had zero cell phone service. So I've been seeing all these people about like they need to maybe do some of this money for alarms, some sort of, you know, hardlined or, you know, not hardlined, you know, you know, systems that can alert people and all that. So I'm just hoping that some of that money can go to that because an alarm, I mean, it was obvious. We were 20 feet into the woods and didn't have anything.
Yeah.
There was nothing.
Yeah, that's a good thought. I mean, I know following this, I mean, they showed something not this drastic, but something also occurred in that area in 1987 that was similar. So, yeah, I mean, like, you know, there needs to be something to try to help out to mitigate when this does occur to try to help people in this terrible situation.
It was wild. It was absolutely wild, and it continues to be so. And obviously good on the Rockets and the Spurs and Mavs, Texans, Cowboys, and Astros.
For sure. And Figgy, you shared yesterday, HEB stepping up as well.
Yeah.
So, it's good to see these corporations and teams that can do this step up and try to do their part. But obviously a terrible story in our or we'll continue to keep these people in our thoughts and prayers, those that are affected by it. Or, of course, if you know someone who was impacted by this tragedy.
Yeah.
Impossible transition, but we'll try to make it nonetheless. The NBA changed forever on this day 15 years ago. Where were you on this day 15 years ago? I remember where I was watching as LeBron made the quote-unquote decision to take his talents to South Beach. Here's what it sounded like on this day 15 years ago.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know. LeBron, what's your decision?
In this fall, man, it's very tough. And this fall, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach and join the Miami Heat.
Miami Heat. That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
That was the conclusion I woke up with this morning.
I forgot how awkward that whole thing was. Yeah. That was the most awkward. It was at a boys' club.
Yeah.
And they had some
girls
kids.
Boys, club.
Boys and girls club. And they had some kids on bleachers in the back. And they didn't know what to do. Yeah. It was just him and
you kind of heard that.
Yes. But. I'd forgotten how awkward it was. But, you know, there's a very strong argument to be made. Like, the NBA changed drastically that day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, the sports world changed drastically that day. You see high school kids now making their announcement to go to play football somewhere. I'm taking my talents, too.
Yeah.
It's true.
That had never been said
I never
before.
Heard that before. I'm taking my talents, too, whatever.
Yeah. So it changed that way. I think what really... was big back then, and Twitter was just sort of, you know, taking off, and the whole rumors of this, and that was Woj back then, you know, rumors of this and that, is he's leaning this way, he's taking these trips, that was all played out on Twitter, and that's when we first started getting, you know, sort of that whole thing, the taking my talents to these announcement, and then the
news on Twitter,
and then the big three, that was the first big three. Then everything changed that day.
I'd never forget that day. I was in my room watching ESPN. I'm like, there's no way he's doing this to leave.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you know? When he said that, I turned the TV right off.
And I was watching.
I ain't even watched the rest of it.
But let me ask you about this: was that good? The way that he changed the NBA, the way the NBA changed on social media, the way you got into this whole super team thing. The empowerment of players, like players have been empowered to make their own sort of path ever since that day.
I don't think the player empowerment's good. Like I hate where the players, you want to force a trade, that's one thing, but I hate the whole idea of they get to go exactly where they want, mm-hmm. you know, and they get the team when it's a trade. It might not be the best thing for the franchise. And we've seen some guys in the NFL even try to pull those types of power moves, and it doesn't work the same in that league. So, no, I don't like the as much player empowerment as there is in the league. I did not prefer the whole Big Three era and the dynasty team-ups. I did think that kind of was good for the league. We were talking about this a little bit yesterday, actually, where I think the dynasties are better than now this parity that we have where it's mm-hmm. a different team each year and it's, you know, new stars, quote-unquote. I think it was actually good for the league when you had Curry against LeBron year after year. I didn't like it, but I thought it was good for the league.
Mm-hmm.
But no, just to answer your question simply, like I wasn't a fan of that direction that the league went into.
Go ahead, Figgy.
Yeah, I feel like the way he did it, I felt like he didn't really force himself out
mm-hmm.
or anything. He waited till he was a free agent and then made his move. I don't think that was wrong, but I felt like other players followed that by trying to force themselves somewhere else like that. And I think that kind of messed it up.
That's where I'm kind of in the same area as Figgy. I want players to be empowered. I want them to be able to get their money and play, you know, in situations that benefit them. I get all that. But my point is there's maybe less than 10 players that really can be that significant.
Mm-hmm.
And now everyone is trying to, I don't want, you know, you're a mid-level guy or you're a role player guy and you're trying to control and do control. You know, where you're going to end up playing. I'm like, come on, man. I mean, there's like maybe 6 or 8 guys that truly could have that kind of power.
Yeah, and now you have people like Bradley Beal.
Right.
Who getting all of this money and then forcing him way out and having a no trade clause and all that stuff. That's the part that kind of messed everything up. I think LeBron might have laid the blueprint a little bit that hey, you don't have to stay with this team. You could team up somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But at least he waited till he was a free agent to make that decision himself. Right. But right. I felt like other people, like a Bradley Beal, is forcing them his way out to go to a certain team mm-hmm. and no trade clause and all that stuff. And it's like, man, he's not even worth all of that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I don't love what it developed in the NBA in the 15 years since. What I really didn't like about that whole thing, because I know like he raised a lot, it raised a lot of money, I think, for that Boys and Girls Club. What I didn't like was that the Cavs found out the same time that Figgy found out in his room, and we found out. And I just think that's bad business mm-hmm. that you were with the Cavs, all that sort of stuff. And that's how Dan Gilbert finds out that you're going to a different team instead of having like a conversation with him before going on air. For that, everyone to find out like that, I just didn't like it. I thought it was bad business personally at the time. But 15 years ago today was a big moment. I remember where I was. You probably remember where you were too watching that on this day 15 years ago. What else is popping? I saw this story. I'm curious if you guys buy this. French Olympic fencer. I can't say. Yasora
Thebes?
Thebes? Yeah, I don't know. Best guess. She will not face punishment for anti-dope. She got caught failing a drug test for performance enhancers. However, she's not going to face any penalties because the Court of Appeals actually bought her explanation. And her explanation was that she got contaminated by kissing a former partner. That got her off. They said, you know what? We believe you that that's what happened, that you didn't take anything you weren't supposed to. Do we buy this story that she was only contaminated by kissing a former partner?
Hell no. Hell no. Why did this work? Like the doping, okay, scientists, doctors, physicians, nurses, help me out here. The doping is in your blood. Kissing is saliva.
Right.
Somebody help me make sense of that.
I don't get it. I have no idea how this worked.
Urine, it's based, you know, it reflects the blood.
Yeah.
And now it's saliva?
I guess so.
I'm going to be kissing everybody if I'm cheating.
Yeah.
Or they were just like really going at it, drawing blood. I don't know. I don't know what has gone on.
Bit each other tongue or something.
Serious kissing right there.
Yeah, sir.
Aggressive kissing.
We've heard so many excuses over the years. I think it was Gary Sheffield
syndrome. Remember that?
Yeah, Gary Sheffield said like his trainer rubbed a cream on him. He didn't realize it was a steroid.
Yeah.
You know, we've always heard these ridiculous stories. This might take the cake, that making out with a former partner.
By the way, throwing the former partner under the bus too.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
He's doping his ass off.
Yeah. Right. I hope she don't have a significant other.
I just kissed him.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. I got to be careful. Or is that what it takes? I got to start making out more if that's going to give me more muscles here. And last thing here on what's popping. We've talked about this a lot. I always refrain from name calling, but this guy, he's just becoming a loser. Rafael Devers now at the Giants. They've been trying to work him out at first base. This was the whole problem in Boston. Devers gets traded to San Francisco. He said, yeah, I'll play first base here. Well, now we get the story this week that he blew off a workout with Giants legend Will Clark to work a first base workout so he could get familiar with this position. I'm so tired of this. First it was Boston. Now it's San Francisco. In Boston, he ghosted David Ortiz, who was trying to help him.
Yeah.
Now Will Clark in San Francisco. You talk about like player empowerment and entitlement and all this sort of stuff. It's just, like I said, I usually refrain from name calling, but Devers is just coming off like a complete loser in all of this, refusing to do what's best for the team, actually work hard, and just make his big payday, his big salary instead.
I think the worst part of it is he not only, you know, he didn't just tell him, I don't want to do this. He stood him up.
Yeah.
Like the workout was scheduled and didn't show. That says something different to me. That tells me that, yes, like you said, you know, loser and all that. But I think this is just a lazy dude. Yeah. I think this is just a lazy dude that wants to be a DH or third baseman. And that's it, you know.
Yeah,
I think he's a problem.
It looked like Boston made the right decision, man.
Yeah.
Because they could easily say, let's not bring in Bregman because we have a third baseman and all that stuff.
And why did they bring in Bregman?
Yeah.
You know, maybe they saw this coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the right call by them.
Mm-hmm. Also, Devers was just a bad third base. Like, he's putting up such a fight to stay at third base when you were a bad third baseman.
Yeah.
And now he won't even try first base. There's also something too, like, you know, not necessarily just respecting your elders, but those that did it before you and did it really well. And so when you ghost David Ortiz and you ghost Will Clark, like, you don't have all the answers. You might be a good baseball player, but these are guys that have been through it before, and it could be beneficial to spend some time with these legends. And, you know, you're not Babe Ruth. You're not the be all end all.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, this story continues to frustrate me more and more with just how stupid he's acting. Speaking of baseball. The Astros, as we know, are having a great season. But is this great season actually a bad thing for your favorite players? We'll talk about that next in the loop.